Water for Life, Kawaiʻola. That is the vision of the Honolulu Board of Water Supply. Today we welcome Ernie Lau, Chief Engineer, to talk about the mission of the agency and the rate hike. Welcome, Ernie.
Well, thank you, Catherine. I'm glad to be here.
Now, we invited you, I think it was a year ago, just as the Board of Water Supply was preparing for those rates. You had input from the stakeholders in the community, and today those rates are in place. Give us the overview.
Okay, so for the overview is these new water rates that go on for the rate increases for the next 4 years was actually adopted by the board in August of 2018. The first year, or from September to the present, the rates, there were no rate increases for that first part of that first year, and we implemented some things like waivers for affordable housing and homeless units to be built. But July 1st, as of July 1st, the new water rates start to begin to kick in. Our customers won't see actually the new water rates till their August bill. It kind of goes back to when your bill was read, because there's a start read and an end read to determine how much water you use between those two meter readings. If your read occurred in the month of June, then you would receive, you'd have a break and you'd be under the old rates. If your read started in the month of July, then you would be billed at the new rates. So we think most of our customers probably won't see the new rates until August.
Okay, and so I was just looking at those rates on your website, and they seem reasonable, not huge jumps.
No, that was kind of our objective there. The last time we had water rate increases back in 2011, adopted by the board, I believe, in November 2011, the increases were in the 9 to 10% a year increase. So this time around, what we wanted to do was achieve, through long-term financial planning, see if we could actually have smaller incremental increases over time as opposed to large increases and a period of no rate increase and then catch up with large increases. Can we just do it more incrementally, maybe in the 4 to 6% a year range? So I'm glad to report that the current rates, and I understand our customers, and I'm a customer myself. I drink what I supply through the Board of Water Supply for me and my family. Nobody really enjoys to have rates increase or costs of services to go up, but that's the reality of what we are challenged and we have to do to ensure that there's safe drinking water for our community. These increases we wanted to do more incremental, and we wanted to actually leverage borrowing more money by floating revenue bonds and using as much state revolving loan funds, drinking water SRF funds as possible. Those are low interest loans. Along with the revenue we get from our customers by paying their water bill to pay for the improvements to our system and our operations.
Now, how are we doing on water main breaks?
Water main breaks this year, and we go by the fiscal year, which starts on July 1st and ends on June 30th. I believe for the FY 2019 to 2018 to 2019 period, we had about 340 main breaks.
Okay, so still about a break a day.
Yeah, unfortunately, pipes will break. So with this investment over time, over the next 10 years, we want to ramp up our pipeline replacements. Remember, we have 2,100 miles of pipeline water mains in our system. So it's a very large water system serving almost a million people each day with drinking water on Oahu. We're going to ramp up to try to replace at least 1% of those pipelines a year. And I would say that's the minimum that we want to achieve. So over the next 10 years, gradually you'll see more pipeline projects. Right now we're, I think, in the 6 or 7 miles a year that being included in our FY20 CIP as projects. But in 10 years or less than 10 years, we want to be up to about 21 miles a year, or about 1%.
And so how does the Board of Water Supply look at this? Because I think with the repair project, at one time the city had a policy of worst first, and then they've gone away from that. They were looking more at the volume, where most of the motorists affected. But how does the Board of Water Supply look at its lines?
We look at it, we evaluate conditions that the pipeline sits in, for example, soil conditions, how corrosive is the soil, is it is there a high groundwater table, so is the pipe submerged all the time, the break history, and I'm glad to report we've been collecting main break data on every segment of pipeline that we have in our system since the 70s. So looking at historical trends, looking at the type of pipes and the type of breaks, and also looking at the consequence of failure, we developed a system to score each segment of pipeline. And from that scoring system, we replaced the pipelines that are should be replaced first before other pipelines that are performing well. Age is not a factor necessarily alone, and we have pipelines that are 100 years old, but the risk and the consequence of failure are factors that weigh into whether or not to replace a pipeline. We do adjust as we see different trends arise, like suddenly a certain segment of pipeline seems to be exhibiting a lot more breaks. Then we look at those segments and we reevaluate to see if we should reprogram that into a near-term replacement.
Okay, and you wouldn't have to know if there's like a major problem area that you're tackling at this point?
There are some areas where we've had experiences with premature failures in some of our PVC pipelines in different areas. Lanikai is one area. There's a part of Waianae. There's some in Nu'uanu. Different areas where some of that pipeline has been breaking prematurely before it should be starting to break. So we're looking at those more carefully.
Okay, and I imagine then you can move things up on the list. If
necessary. But we want to be very careful because if you do start to do things arbitrarily, then you all this effort to develop a 30-year plan, you end up actually having no plan if it is basically just arbitrarily decisions and where to replace pipelines are just completely arbitrary. But we think it's important to have a long-term plan to be able to, in a very rational, logical basis, address the needs of the water system. And we want to maximize the life of our assets, our pipelines in particular, and get as much life as we can out of them. But we do need to, at some point, have to replace them. And when and where to replace that, that is the challenge. But we are continuing to work on that.
Right. And I recall, I think it was a year ago, we had that really large main break just off the freeway in East Honolulu, that awkward spot. It was
thank you for reminding me about that. That was quite an experience, not a good experience for our community. But that was a break on a 24-inch pipeline. Just as you come off the eastbound lane of the H1 of the freeway going toward just near Wale Country Club, the golf course. And that pipeline, that break was difficult because it was at a point where the pipe was diving under the stream there. So it was very deep.
Deep.
I think the hole that we dug was almost 30 feet deep. And we ended up using almost 300 cubic yards of backfill to fill up the hole to do that repair. Had a tremendous effect on traffic there on the freeway going eastbound. So we've learned from that in critical locations like that where we experience a break, that we need to also look at how do we manage the traffic. And because of that, we've actually developed like a rapid response team working with multiple agencies, the State Department of Transportation, the Department of Transportation Services with the city, the Honolulu Police Department, ourselves to figure out alternative plans on how to manage traffic in those areas.
Right. And I think it was a teachable moment, I think, for everybody because we got to see how your life could be impacted when you have an unexpected break like that, of that magnitude, in that tricky situation. And then, you know, probably people are thinking, yep, we got to do something about these aging pipelines. We've got to address those.
Yeah, so the difficult decision is because the Board of Water Supply is financially self-sufficient, we depend on our customers paying their water bills. And I want to make sure there's a distinction here. A lot of our customers have both a water and sewer charge on their bill. The water charge is the responsibility of Board of Water Supply, and that helps to pay for replacing old pipelines, upgrading the water system. On the other side is the wastewater charges, and that's part of the Department of Environmental Services.
Okay, well, we did send our crew out downtown and talked. They tried to talk to people that were out there paying their bills yesterday. We talked to Julie, and here's what she had to say.
Water is necessary for life. We need to make sure that it's clean. We have a Board of Water Supply. I don't know what they're going to do with the money and how they're going to use it, but I think that it's hard enough to live in Hawaii, and I think it's getting to be more expensive. I think I'd like to know it seems to me that the most cost of the water is the sewer, is the cost of the use of the sewer. So it doesn't even seem that it's the water use, but that seems to be the highest part of the bill, and maybe to talk more about that.
You know, I think, like you said, that's the misconception. People get that bill, and it just so happens that you've got both the water charge and the sewer charge, and it's usually the sewer charge that's a lot larger.
That's very true. And as an example, a customer, say, using 9,000 gallons a month, their total bill might be $159. Of that $159, and this includes water and sewer charges, the water charge is about $49. And the sewer charge would be almost $110. So you can see the difference between the water and sewer charges. Our challenge is that we, both the sewer side and the water side, you know, between ENV and BWS, we have a lot of large infrastructure. And infrastructure needs reinvestment into that infrastructure to keep that infrastructure providing the necessary services to our community. And for the water side, we want to be very diligent about doing that and continue to invest adequately into the water system so we can try to mitigate the need for large increases over time, but do, like I say, more incremental increases each year as opposed to large increases.
And we should probably point out with the Environmental Services Department for the city, they're under a federal consent decree, a court order, because we had some very large breaks, and there was concern about we can't just keep going forward like this and reacting to broken water pipes because we've got to protect our water, whether it's the ocean or our drinking water.
That's very true. You know, it's so the clean water comes from the Board of Water Supply, but what leaves the home is the water that needs to be handled properly to keep our environment safe and pure. So both are important. And unfortunately, for the Board of Water Supply, we don't have a EPA consent decree. ENV is addressing that, and I think they've done a good job in trying to meet the requirements and timetable for the improvements to the wastewater collection and treatment system.
Right. I mean, it's a bill that we don't like to pay because it does take a big chunk out of our budgets, but with ENV, with the sewer charge, they've got a big stick. It's a court order, and we had to reach a global settlement and come up with a plan and structure on how we're going to do that. And so that's why that lion's share is there.
I think, Catherine, too, I just want to put everything in perspective. There are certain costs that are necessary costs for us to live here in Hawaii and on Oahu. Having a good, safe supply and dependable supply of drinking water is important to our community. There is no life without water. But also dealing with the ways to keep our environment, our aina, clean and pure. Because we also, that is a trust resource, our environment. And we need to malama the aina to take care of it. So both are necessary costs that have to be paid. There are other costs that, even for myself, I've been working hard to see how I can reduce my cable bill. Not to slam the cable companies here, but if I had to choose between paying my cable bill or paying my water bill to have drinking water every day, I would decide that's more important than the cable bill. And I've been after my daughters about how do we reduce our cell phone bill, which is actually way larger than the water bill.
Well, that puts that in perspective, right?
Yeah, I think it's important, and it's not something that people are happy about, the cost of these bills, but there are, I think, some things that are much more important to our survival than other things.
Right. Water for life, right?
Water for life. Kaubai ola.
If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about rising water rates here on Oahu. You can join the discussion, too, by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands if you have any thoughts about the cost of water and what we need to do to protect this very valuable resource. You know, I think last time you were in, we were joking about our bill because I brought my bill in, and I think for a household of four, I think mine was lower than yours. But
sad to say.
Yeah, but, you know, but you do have to work at it to be more cognizant. And I think with these rates, you know, you've got to break down here where if you're a low monthly user, you get a little bit of a break, right? It's to encourage that.
That's correct, Catherine. Thanks for bringing that up. We did implement for the first time a first tier called the Essential Needs Tier. The first 2,000 gallons to our residential customers would be provided to them at below cost to provide that 2,000 gallons. So we felt we heard some of the challenges, you know, that our kupuna had shared with us about struggling on limited incomes. And yet, you know, they had to struggle to pay their bills, you know. So we wanted to make this essential needs here, this first 2,000 gallons to the residential customer available at below cost. After that, we tried to recover more of the cost to provide that water. And at the top tier, the fourth tier, that's where the high water users in our residential customer class, that's about 3% of our customer base. We have, I think it's around at least 150,000 residential customers in our system. That top 3%, we increased the cost per 1,000 gallons as a way to provide a incentive to try to reduce their usage. I guess it's a disincentive. On the low side, if a person keeps their usage as low as they can, we're actually kind of rewarding them with the essential needs here, the first 2,000 gallons at below cost. So kind of a positive and negative feedback to our customers to encourage water conservation. Just want to reiterate, we have a finite supply of fresh water on this island. We need to be good stewards of that resource, and we need to only use water that we need to use each day and be very efficient at it and practice water conservation.
How does the Board of Water Supply look at you know, we've had a proliferation of monster homes where we had, they're like single family or multifamily units, but then, you know, you've got like 16 bedrooms and you know, whatever, 16 bathrooms. So yes. You imagine that's a lot of usage.
So what we do is they pay for the capacity they're going to take from our system. So if they, we charge based on something called plumbing fixture units. So the more plumbing fixture units you have, the higher this the cost of the to get a meter, and that's to basically pay for the capacity you're using. So when the monster home comes in with 16 bedrooms, 16 toilets, a few kitchens in there, you know, we're counting all the plumbing fixtures and calculating how much to charge them based on the capacity they're going to use in the system. We evaluate the system in that area to see if we have the capacity to serve them, and they pay for it.
Yeah, I imagine, though, if you've got a lot of users, your bill's going to be a big one.
That is, and remember, too, on the residential customers, so the monster homes fall probably still in the single-family class for us, a single residential dwelling unit, unless they're in a clearly a multi, they're almost like a multi-family unit, but in a way, they're actually trying to do that in a single-family area. So they are charged with a single-family rate. The tiers are the same as their neighbor that might have only four people in the home as opposed to 16 people in the monster home. So they're gonna hit the third tier much faster than their neighbors, and that'll be reflected in their bill.
Okay. We do have a couple of calls on the line. Thomas from Manoa, do you have a question?
Hello. Yes, thank you.
Good morning.
We're on a large double property, and we have three toilets. So during times of the year, like right now, I need to water the garden to maintain the plants that are there and the newly installed ones before they get established. We normally have a lot of rain and the water bill is generally low, but because the toilets factor in, I believe, if that's not correct, they create a very high water bill when I do need to water this 0.4 acres of property. And that seems very unfair. I mean, if this is based on a sort of an average property, and I can't imagine what that might be here, because some people don't have any you know, garden space, and some people, like where I live, we have a much larger than average property. That, I think, is not really fair, and there should be some type of equation adjustment to allow for the, because that water is not going down the toilet, it's actually going to water and beautify the space.
It's a good point.
So, Tom?
Yeah, Thomas.
Thomas, thank you. I live in Manoa, too, and I have a much smaller property, so I don't even irrigate. There is an opportunity. I think if you look at your bill, probably the you're also getting charged a sewer charge on that bill. Is that correct?
Oh, he might not be still on the line.
Oh, okay. But
yeah.
if you have a large property and a good part of your demand is irrigation, you could apply, and there are rules on the ENV website, and the process is to actually create a submeter to submeter the irrigation usage that doesn't go down into the sewer system. And then that will give you at least a kind of a break on the sewer charges, which is for the typical residential customer, the sewer charges are larger than the water customer, like I explained on the 9,000 gallon a month customer.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. So you can apply for that.
The process, though, I'm told by customers, is not an easy process, but that is an option. For Board of Water Supply, a single-family residential customer is a single-family residential customer regardless of the lot size and the irrigation demand. Well, we do encourage customers to look at ways to be efficient in their irrigation of that landscape area. And right now we're offering a rebate on, I think, intelligent controllers for irrigation systems. So you only irrigate, you make sure you're not irrigating when it's raining. These are smart controllers, irrigation controllers. So we have a rebate program. Go to boardofwatersupply.com, and there's information about the rebates for that. We also have water energy efficient washing machines that qualify for a rebate from the Board of Water Supply. The other area, because you're in Manoa too, there's a lot of rain in Manoa. I know that. I think it rained last night. You can also install catchment systems, and we have classes at the Halawa Xeriscape Garden on how to install a rain catchment system that help offset some of your irrigation needs.
That brings us to our next caller, Fred from Puna. You have a comment to make on that very point.
Yes, we live 100% on catchment water on the Big Island, a lot of us. And I think Oahu should do more catching of their downspouts and use that water. It's a good resource that's going to waste by flowing down the street. Instead, they could catch it in a tank and disperse it in their garden.
Right. I mean, you don't have a choice, a lot of the folks on the Big Island. But here on Oahu, if we make that concerted effort to learn about how to do this and how to hook up a tank to your gutters.
Yes, and we even have classes or workshops to actually train people on how to create a rain catchment system, so I agree 100% with that. That's for our residential customers, and we have a rebate right now. I think it's $40 for a rain catchment barrel. Don't quote me on the number, but I think it's around $40 rebate from the Board of Water Supply if you purchase a rain barrel from, say, a store.
Yeah, I took one of those classes, so I have one of those rain barrels.
Yeah, and actually, that's a deal. Class costs, I think, $35, and you take the class and you walk away with a rain barrel with all the fittings.
Yes, it's fabulous, and it's very easy to do. It was well worth that Saturday, I tell you.
Thank you.
If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about rising water rates here on Oahu. You can join the discussion by calling 941-3689, or if you're from the neighbor islands, call 1-877-941-3689. We'll be right back after a short break.
Wayne Wilkinson brings a high-octane jazz guitar performance filled with fast-fingered licks and cool grooves. For tickets, visit hprtickets.org. Sponsored by Amoresco.
I'm Stephen Dubner on the next Freakonomics Radio. It's an activity that's both universal and eternal.
We do know that board games are just about as old as civilization itself and human beings.
And playing games brings us joy regardless of the outcome, right?
Losers look for joy. I look for victory.
How to win games and beat people. That's next time on Freakonomics Radio.
This evening at 7, right after Counterspin.
We are back in the studio with Ernie Lau, Chief Engineer for the Honolulu Board of Water Supply. And Ernie, you know, I have to say, I jumped onto the website last night and I was really surprised to learn about those rebates. I didn't know about it. And I thought, that what a great idea.
Yeah, we've been trying to inform people about it. So clothes washers, smart irrigation controllers, and rain barrels. And we're looking for more opportunities to help customers conserve water. So kind of my philosophy of the water rates was to kind of keep this tiered rate structure and keep our fixed charge as low as we can keep it, the monthly fixed charge, which we used to call a billing charge. We're now calling a monthly customer charge, and that's going to change to be based on meter size. And the rest of the charges would become from water usage or quantity charges. So the idea there was to empower our customers to have greater control over their water usage and their water bill, and to be able to try, through conservation, be able to reduce their bill. So it's empowering our customers, and rebates and other programs are just the beginning of what we're trying to do here.
What are the big suckers? Are they, you know, is it the toilets? You know, is it the washing machine, or are they just leaks?
Leaks can also be a problem, but toilets are something you should always kind of check. And we do give out dye tablets, and working with like City Mill, I think we've given out dye tablets to our customers during the Detect a Leak Week. So running toilets is a notorious water waster. Irrigation systems, you really want to monitor those very carefully. These are automatic sprinkler systems because if you're not, they can use a lot of water quickly. So you want to really monitor that. So I think that clothes washing, you want to try to wash with fuller loads as opposed to small loads, but the washing machine is full of water. Rain catchment, use rain catchment, I think, to enhance where you can your irrigation needs. Those are some of the areas. When you wash your car, don't leave a running hose. Use a bucket. And at some point, you know, and a spray nozzle on the hose.
Yeah, that really helps.
Yeah, so the hose is not running into the gutter and wasting water.
Okay, we have a call coming in from Maui. Peter from Kihei, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I think my question has been answered to it. I have a huge yard, small house with a lot of trees, and I use a lot of water for irrigation instead of flushing it down the toilet. And also it would be nice if manufacturer of dishwashers and washers make like they have a label how much energy it's used, but it doesn't say how much water gallons per wash does it use in different cycles. So that would be nice for manufacturer to put it on. So the customer have a choice to buy some water efficient appliances. And I also have a question. I was trying to recycle car fluids, like brake fluids, the hydraulic fluid, and coolant and transmission, and Maui County said just double bag it and put it in the dump. And then I call dump and they say, oh, it's totally safe, it won't leak to the aquifer, we have a layer. But I heard this before with the Titanic, you know, it's unsinkable. Then Hanford, you know, it's 2% leak proof. Nuclear site now is a super site because it's leaking in the Columbia River.
Yeah, so you're concerned about the about protecting the resource, doing the right thing.
That too, yeah. And so I was wondering, why do we put all the hazardous waste, like even household batteries, fluorescent tubes, all in the dump, which if it leaks, it will leak. So 10, 20 years maybe, they say it will not.
Yeah, so you're concerned. So, Sir Ernie, I mean, you know, what do you think? I mean, I know this is not your area, but
yeah, definitely not my area. but sir, your concern for the environment is well taken, and it's the right direction for us to move in. What you put into dumps. So hopefully, first of all, that the dump is not located over a high quality drinking water aquifer or water resource there. But also that it was constructed properly to keep contaminants from leaking out of it. But you're right. I think in Honolulu, and I want to be careful because this is actually also the Department of Environmental Services under the Solid Waste Program. They have something on Oahu called H-Power. So I know when I used to change my car engine oil myself, I put it into a cardboard box with shredded newspaper in it so it would soak up the oils. Then I'd put it into the garbage, and then it would go and be burned at H-Power to convert that waste into energy. Those are well-taken points, though, sir. I think protecting our resources is very important. What we put in the ground may eventually end up in the water, in the water itself. So we want to be careful what we put on the ground.
Right. We hear Malama, the Aina, all the time, and you think that's really got to be in people's minds.
Yeah, even the average homeowner and what they do. Don't dump the oil down the storm drain.
We have another call coming in from Makiki. Art, you have a question?
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
All right. Yeah, you know, we have the highest electricity rates in the country. I was wondering where water rates compare, or how they compare to the rest of the country.
That's a good point. Do you know that, Ernie?
Yes, I just had that. I think we're around the middle. We're not the lowest and we're not the highest. We're sort of in the middle. I think places like San Francisco is near the top. Seattle is above us. Honolulu is sort of in the middle for water, water charges. We looked at quite a few cities in comparison on using 9,000 gallons and with a 3/4 inch meter, water meter.
That's interesting to know. But we do have very good water, good tasting water, I should say.
Yeah, we're very blessed to have this water, groundwater resources on Oahu.
We have another call coming in, Rosemary from Aina Haina. What's on your mind?
Hi. I know that you addressed putting a second meter in. I tried to do that, and it was so expensive I couldn't afford it. It was several thousand dollars.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Was that a sub-meter for your irrigation usage?
Yes.
Yeah, that's,
yes.
I did mention I think the process is not an easy process to get a sub-meter.
Well, but it's also very expensive, let alone easy. I mean, we can spend time if it's going to save us. My sewer cost is so expensive, and I use very little water. I don't water my lawn any longer. I have a almost 12,000 square foot lot, and it's really dying. But I don't know what else to do. I'm 80 years old, and I'm trying to keep this up, and my water bill keeps going up, and it's impossible. I tried to put, as I said, tried to put that in, but it wasn't the timing or trying to do that. Someone was even helping me do it, but because it was so expensive, I couldn't afford it.
Yeah, thank you, ma'am. I'll be sure to share that with the other department about the submeter cost and complexity.
And you probably don't know, but I don't know if that's available on the neighbor islands because, you know, each county has their own
I can't speak for the other. I only know what we do here in Honolulu City and County. But ma'am, if your usage is low, that essential needs here, that first 2,000 gallons that is actually below cost, will be provided, and you'll get that benefit for on your water side of the bill, not the sewer side.
And, you know, we talked about the aquifer. We did talk with Representative Ed Case, who was in our studios last week. He sits on the Military Appropriations Committee. We were talking about aging infrastructure. There were two breaks of note. There was one at Wyava and Tripler, I think, which even set, shut down the VA clinic for a day because of that concern. And he, you know, supporting efforts to have the military replace those lines. I did ask him about Red Hill, because we have a situation where the fuel, underground fuel storage tanks are right above our aquifer. He talked about the concern about the need for the Red Hill because it's vital for national security interests. I did ask him about whether he supported double lining of the tanks. Here's what he had to say.
First of all, the main problem with double lining is that it reduces the capacity of the tanks significantly. And the military says, and I believe them, that in order for these tanks to actually be able to contribute to national security, they have to have a certain capacity. And so if you reduce the capacity by, I think it's 17% by double lining, you're not at what the military believes they need in an actual situation where they're going to really need it on a fast basis.
And I know, Ernie, you have some very strong feelings about what we should do to protect our aquifer up there.
It kind of goes back to that caller from the island of Maui talking about what they put into the landfill. 100% of that Red Hill underground fuel storage facility, which was constructed between 1940 and 43, is one over the drinking water aquifer there in that area. And we also, we and the Navy pump to provide drinking water from that aquifer. Today in that old facility we built in World War II, there's at least 187 million gallons of diesel and jet fuel stored there in tanks that are quite old. The only thing that keeps the fuel from leaking out into the environment is a quarter-inch thick steel plate that was welded together to be the liner of in the underground to keep the fuel from leaking out. And we know that quarter-inch steel plate is rusting, as we saw with the coupons or cutouts that were taken out of tank number 14, that the backside of that quarter-inch steel plate is corroding. So our concern is that this is ultimately going to leak more frequently and perhaps larger amounts of fuel, and it'll go right down into the aquifer. So I respectfully disagree with Congressman Case's assessment. I agree with the health director, Bruce Anderson's assessment that on the long term, those tanks need to be moved into a location not over our drinking water resources because we know it is a great has a great potential risk to contaminate our water resources.
And we do have a caller on the line. Nobu from Pearl City, you had a question about Red Hill?
Red Hill, but since you've already covered it, I'm just going to thank Ernie for his actions in championing the water resource that we have there and trying to protect it from possible leaks. I did have another question for Ernie, though, which was about possible revenue generation. Has the Board of Water Supply given any thought to possibly installing communications, cabling, or conduits alongside the water mains whenever you open up a trench for the water mains that could possibly then be used to generate revenue?
Thank you. And actually, there is an arrangement with a telecom company. I'm not sure if the company is still in operation to utilize some of our empty or abandoned water lines to put conduits in it. The risks that we that a telecommunication company faces when they put their buried fiber optics cable right next to our water line is when a water main, which is under pressure, sometimes 100 pounds per square inch pressure, when it breaks, that break could damage and destroy the cable there for the telecommunications company. And so we actually want the telecom companies to put their fiber optics cable a good distance away from our water lines, because every time we break their water their fiber optics cable, I seem to get a bill for about $60,000 for damages to their line. So it's a good idea, but I think because our water lines are under high pressure and we can cause damage when the pipe breaks, and we know pipes will break eventually, that it's going to be costly for us to deal with that, having to pay the telecom companies for the damages that we inflicted on their fiber optics cable.
You know, and going back to Red Hill, I don't know where we're at in the process as far as the work plan to address, you know, putting in monitoring wells just to make sure that if any more fuel does leak in that area, that we know about it ahead of time.
So they're still working on this administrative order and consent, a voluntary agreement between the Navy, the Defense Logistics Agency, the U.S. EPA, and the State Department of Health. Where they're at right now, as far as I know, is that they did do the destructive testing of the steel plate in tank number 14. We have not seen a final report back, but the objective of that study was to determine if their current method of scanning from the inside to see what the outside of the scanning the steel plate from the inside of the tank to see what the condition is on the outside of that steel plate is, how effective that is. And there's also, I think, possibly later this year, the Navy may be submitting to the Department of Health and EPA a recommendation on how to upgrade the tanks. And we've been advocating from the very beginning they should double wall them if they must keep them there. If they haven't doubled wall those tanks, then we think it's a good idea, like what Dr. Anderson is saying from the Department of Health, that they need to move it away from being over the aquifer.
And I did jump on the website to look at the links just to see what the latest is, and I guess they've modified the application that's pending before the Department
right.
of Health.
Yeah, the Navy has is required now to get a permit for the Red Hill underground fuel storage facility, and that permit's being reviewed by the Department of Health.
I had to chuckle because I did go online, and it's like 124-page application, and a lot of it is blacked out because it's sensitive information.
Well, that's we have concerns about the quote-unquote redactions there. Because it makes it very difficult if a large proportion of the application is redacted.
Yeah, you can't read it. You don't know.
We can't really provide constructive comments on a permit application that is heavily redacted like that.
Okay. We do have another call on the line. Gail from Pearl City. You have a question or a comment? Hello? Hi there. Are you there?
My question is, why do we continue to let people water their lawns? I have a neighbor who waters and waters and waters. Then he cuts it till it gets brown. Then he waters and waters. You know, we haven't watered our yard for 20 years. It gets brown, and then it gets green when it rains. I think it's a waste of water to allow people to water lawns. We water our plants with recycled water from saving our kitchen rinse, et cetera. So, you know, I watch people water their lawns. I just think it's a waste of water.
Well, I applaud you for that. That's terrific that you make that effort to use your, I guess it's gray water, right?
Recycled water. Making best use of all the water in your home for irrigation purposes, yeah. Watering lawns, that's kind of a personal choice for each customer. They are paying the bill, though, for the usage, and the way the water rates are structured in tiers, four tiers, that if they get into that fourth tier, they're paying a lot more per 1,000 gallons than for that portion of the usage. So I think people need to just be Akamai about how they irrigate their lawns and landscaping, and be careful not to over-irrigate. Because also what can happen if you irrigate too often, too frequently, the root system from the turf may only go very shallow. So when you get into dry summer conditions, the grass may not be able to survive that. But I am like this customer. I don't even water my grass. Unfortunately, it grows, but I live in Manoa. So.
Right. And I know you have a number of programs at the Halaba site where you try and get people to plant unthirsty plants.
Yes, that's a good point. We have a whole garden there at the end of, I think it's Eva Enna Street in Halaba Valley, near our Halaba shaft. And it's really there as a demonstration garden to give ideas to homeowners, customers, on how they can be water efficient in their landscaping by selecting the proper plant material that's drought tolerant, that's appropriate for their climate, and irrigation practices, soil conditioning practices. So we hold workshops there, and all this information is available online at our BoardOfWaterSupply.com website. And in August, in about a month, we are going to have our unthirsty plant sale. So we welcome everybody to come out. I think the date was around August 3rd or so, but we'll be sure to get that message out on our website and through the media.
Right. No, it's a great way to be able to conserve water, not water as much, by planting things that are drought tolerant.
Drought tolerant, irrigating smartly, so you select the right plants for the location.
We have another call coming in from Kula. Helen, you have a question for our chief engineer here?
I have a question regarding the tiers. I'm not sure if it's the same on Oahu as it is on Maui. But on Maui, the 3/4-inch meters are not hit by the highest tier. And those meters tend to be owned by people at gentlemen estates and large fancy estates down in the Wailea and McKenna area. And they don't actually get penalized at the same rate that the 5/8 meters, which are a typical residential meter most homes have. And I'm not sure if that happens on Oahu as well. It seems very unfair because those people are the ones that are using the water most, and they're really wasting the water the most, so, and they can afford it.
No, good question.
Thank you. Slight difference between Maui and Oahu. I think Maui, the charges are based on meter size. We also charge based on meter size, but we do have different customer classes. I am not 100% sure about Maui, but on Oahu, we have what we call a single-family residential class of customers or type of customers, and we have a certain tier structure for them. We have the multi-unit residential customer, and we have the non-residential customer, and we have the ag customer. And they may use different size meters. For Oahu, the 5/8 and 3/4-inch meters, most common meter size for our single-family residential customers. And our four tiers apply to them all.
Okay, so that's a good point, though, because people are wondering about the capacity of those pipes. We have another call from Oahu's North Shore. Mike, what's your question?
Yeah, hi. We have a 440-acre freshwater lake in the middle of the Oahu, Lake Wilson. Could you talk about how that affects the water table and the management of the water quality in there affects it?
I can talk a little bit about it. I'm not completely familiar with Lake Wilson. I know Lake Wilson. That large body water is probably recharging the aquifer there because it's a large, you know, it's unlined in the bottom. It's just probably mud and earth. So it's probably percolating some of it into the aquifer. The quality issues, I think they're looking at the wastewater treatment plant that discharges into the reservoir, but they're also looking at how do we reuse that treated effluent for farming, for agriculture, and other areas.
I think that was in play when we had the sugar companies out there.
It was all of it originated with sugar companies. I can say that we are looking at reservoirs that Board of Water Supply owns, which is in Nuuanu. Our biggest one being Nuuanu number 4. It's an open reservoir with an earthen embankment dam similar to Lake Wilson. We're looking at it as an opportunity to capture stormwater, retain it, allow it to help recharge the aquifer, and maybe generating electricity as it flows from a higher elevation to a lower elevation in a pumped hydro system. So that's as much as I know about the issues. It's not under our responsibility, our kuleana.
All right. We've only got a couple minutes, but we have a call-in from the Big Island. Bob, you have a quick question?
Are you there?
Yes. We have two minutes.
Here we go. I'm from California. We had major drought a while ago. I've been over here 10 years. In California, if you went to a restaurant, you had to ask for water. They didn't give it to you for free anymore. They cut that out. You couldn't water your lawn. You couldn't wash your car. And they kept it emphasizing gray water for the garden, please. We only have so much water, and it depends on the snowfall in the Sierras. And all the main water was going to almond trees and rice paddies. They had rice paddies in Northern California going up I-5. Unbelievable. Yeah. Now I'm flying over to Oahu for a medical procedure from Kaiser, and I look out the window of the airplane. I've never seen so many swimming pools.
Okay.
Going up to Kaiser, looking out the window.
Thanks so much for that. It's a good point. Is there anything we can do with pools? We've got about 30 seconds.
Well, those customers are paying for the water in those pools through their water meter, so if they decide they want to use their water for that purpose, then they are paying the bill.
Okay. All right. I think we had another question about whether it's possible to lower your sewage fees with a pool, but I don't know.
I don't know where to go with that.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Well, we do thank you, Ernie Lau, for joining us for this entire hour. Lots of good questions from all over the state. Thanks again for joining us on today's show. And thank you for listeners for calling in. If your call didn't make it on the air, you can still contact the Talkback line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. Send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.